out and rock it. This happened to Jimmy, a sales rep for a large national insurance company. He came up to me at a conference because he was frustrated that he kept missing his quarterly numbers. His boss was riding him hard, and Jimmy feared that if he didn't get those numbers up, he'd be canned. As a young father of three with a mortgage, he was understandably stressed. When we dug deeper, I discovered he hated making sales calls, which is pretty tough when that's your job. "Why do you hate making sales calls?" I asked. Jimmy shrugged and said, "I'm uncomfortable making them. I don't know what to say. People always seem too busy to talk. They're just hard." "Okay, well, when you think of a salesperson, what image pops into your head?" I asked. "Someone annoying or bothering someone," he shot back. "Interesting. What about them is bothersome or annoying?" "People know that you're there to get their money." "So when you think of a salesperson, you imagine someone out for themselves?" "Yes." Jimmy didn't know it, but he was acting out an incredibly potent story. This story was rooted in a deeply held belief about salespeople. Salespeople are dishonest. They don't care about people. They only feed people lines so they can nail the sale, was the story. No wonder he hated making sales calls and failed to meet his quarterly numbers. Every time he picked up the phone, the trapped self that showed up hated salespeople. This is one of the common forces I outlined in Chapter 6, a bad attitude. There's no way his heroic self, with its best traits, was going to shine through. He could have tried to change his behaviors and actions. He could have tried to tell himself that salespeople are fantastic, which they are, but it probably wouldn't have stuck. Not when the trapped self he brought to his field of play categorically believed salespeople weren't to be trusted. Jimmy wasn't showing up with confidence, integrity, or passion on his calls. Every time he picked up the phone, the little tape in his head played, "Hey Jimmy, what makes you think these people want to talk to you? You're just out to hustle them for money, aren't you? You're not fooling anyone. They see right through you. Come on, they have better things to do with their days. Wrap up this call now." Imagine how much more successful Jimmy's calls would have gone if he picked up that phone and the story he acted out went like, "I can't wait to talk with Bob and find out if there's any way I can make his life easier, better, or more enjoyable." If that was the story Jimmy believed, I guarantee he'd show up differently, with more confidence and conviction, smoothly closing more sales. I bet he'd have a lot more fun, too. If you're furrowing your brow, shaking your head, or pondering what story or stories in your head are influencing your results, don't worry. Often the enemy, the forces, and the story we're living out can be a part of one big tangled web trapping us. I've teased these three threads apart, not so you can tie yourself up and get frustrated or overwhelmed. I've walked you through these three areas to help you possibly find some insights into what makes you tick. What might trap you or create unneeded friction? A better story awaits. For years, Amy worked in corporate America in project management and strategic planning. She had followed her dream of starting a business and, like many new entrepreneurs, found her business limping along. When I connected with Amy, she was a year and a half into her new business and struggling with a widespread affliction. She had half-finished bridges. She started a lot of projects but couldn't drive them to completion. I told myself that I was a total starter, a non-finisher. I never finished anything, so no wonder I wasn't getting the results, Amy told me. I told myself this story for 38 years, and it created so much suffering. Suffering from missed opportunities, from the crippling self-doubt, of the self-judgment, of the self-criticism. When I introduced the alter ego concept to Amy, who is now an entrepreneur, it made sense to her immediately. I was in a place where I was open to hearing new things about myself and about the way that I thought about myself. So I was able to notice all the talking that I was doing to myself and the stories I was telling myself. My current story was I'm inconsistent with my results, whether that was related to my health and wellness, my relationships, or my business. The story Amy had lived for so long was that she was inconsistent with the results in her life. Her alter ego story became the opposite. Her alter ego story was, I'm consistent with the results in my life. I never thought I could be different, Amy said. I could just choose to decide to be different, and that was available to me. I had no idea. I thought the story that I'm inconsistent was a fundamental part of who I am, and that I could never get rid of it. I journaled about this for years, and then all of a sudden, this story didn't have to define me. I could write a new one, and I could be different. Amy's story and the others before her reveal that when you use the creative force from your core self and intentionally decide who will show up, the things and behaviors you've always had can shift instantly. As I said in Chapter 5, on your field of play and in your moments of impact, you have all these traits available to you. But most of us don't realize it. Most of us don't realize that we can choose to magnify different characteristics in different moments of impact. Most of us don't realize that we're telling ourselves a lethal story that we believe is gospel, when in fact, we can silence it and create and live a new story. In the last few chapters, we looked at the ordinary world and how the enemy, common and hidden forces, and personal narratives have a powerful effect on how or if you show up as your heroic self. Tell me, are you willing to have a little fun? Are you willing to use the power of your imagination and play with a natural part of the human experience? Are you willing to suspend who you've been and how you've performed for a moment in time and let another version of yourself show up instead? When I first started working with a mentor of mine, Harvey Dorfman, I marveled at his indifference to the opinions of others. It made sense that one of the preeminent mental game coaches on the planet didn't worry about the judgments of others. But it still amazed me, mostly because it was the very thing crippling me from taking action. Now, the need to be validated by others is long gone, and it still amazes my wife that I once struggled with it. When I was in my early 20s, I was a lot different. I was so concerned about the opinions of others that I allowed myself to play second fiddle to everyone. I put everyone else's needs, wants, and desires above my own. I cared so much about what other people thought of me and whether they liked me that it held me back. The only place where all bets were off and I could suspend trampling myself and interests was on the sports field. Parts of the identity and behavior of my alter ego, Richard, his decisiveness and self-confidence, were borrowed from the sports field. People that I coach tell me they wish they could stop caring and worrying about what other people think of them. If I could just tap into that like you do, they often say. They can, and so can you. For a moment in time, just a few minutes even, anyone could suspend the stories they've been carrying with them on the field of play and in a moment of impact. Anyone can overcome whatever hidden force is holding them back or change whatever story they've been living out. All it takes is your willingness to suspend your disbelief. After I asked the colonel about his dad uniform of golf shirt and jeans and whether it meant anything to him, he struggled with the idea that it could mean anything significant. But just as I assured him, I want to assure you, there's a natural process you already use that can turn something ordinary into something extraordinary. Chapter 9. Choosing Your Extraordinary World. 21 years ago, I met a man doing what I wanted to do. When I was growing up as a farm kid, 4-H was a natural part of the process of living in the farming world. 4-H is like agricultural Boy Scouts. You select which club you want to join, cattle, horses, sewing, etc., and you spend the next year working on a project. I was in the cattle club. And from the age of 10, I would go out into the pasture with my dad, pick a young male calf or steer, take care of it for the next 8 months, wake up early to feed it, and come home from school and head straight to the barn to feed it again. I spent parts of weekends training it to be led around on a halter. This effort culminated in all the cattle clubs from our area showing their steers at a final competition. By the way, 4-H stands for Head, Heart, Hands, and Health, and it's meant to develop character, responsibility, and leadership. Beyond caring for my steer, which I typically named Brutus, Barney, or Bam Bam, because I felt B was the appropriate letter to start a young steer's name with, we also had to take part in creating a governing body for our club. We elected a president, vice president, treasurer, and secretary. The purpose was to teach governance and learn how to run an organization with professionalism. We also had to prepare and give a speech about any topic we were interested in at a yearly competition. This is the part you may cringe at, having to stand up in front of your peers, parents, judges, and a room filled with 60 to 200 people is enough for most people to recoil from. And it was. For everyone else, except me. I loved it. I loved the process of writing my speech and having the chance to give it. At the age of 10, I won the competition, competing against kids a lot older than I. Ironically, because of the career I ended up pursuing, my speech was about the Olympics. Now, this isn't a story about how amazing I am, by any stretch, because in many ways, the deck was stacked in my favor. I was around parents who often had to give presentations or speeches, and I was an outgoing kid who loved the spotlight. So being on a stage wasn't a big deal to me. However, it gets us back to that man I mentioned at the beginning of the chapter. I went to an event with my uncle in the Rocky Mountains of Canada where he was receiving an award. I sat next to a man at the head of the table who was different. He asked questions to a 21-year-old that I hadn't been asked before. So what do you feel called to go and do? What do you want to be proud you accomplished by the time you're 30? What's the biggest action you could take in the next 2 weeks that will help you move toward that goal? It was refreshing. Having an older gentleman take that much interest in causing me to think differently was a new experience. He seemed wise, refined, and genuinely interested. I told him about speaking as a young kid and how I wanted to find a way to do that as a profession. About owning my own business and traveling the world because I hadn't seen much at the time. The conversation flowed until it was interrupted when they introduced the night's keynote speaker. Suddenly, the man I was talking to got up from his seat and went to the podium. I felt like an idiot. I just got done telling this man that I wanted to speak for a living, essentially, and he was the actual speaker for the evening. Over the next 53 minutes, I sat spellbound. He was incredible. He said things like, "Whatever good things we build, end up building us. If you don't like how things are, change it. You're not a tree. We must all suffer one of two things, the pain of discipline or the pain of regret." Jim Rohn was the most eloquent wordsmith I'd ever heard. Forbes magazine even named him one of the three most important business philosophers of the 20th century. When he sat back down after a standing ovation and I pulled my jaw up from the floor, I apologized for not knowing who he was. He shot back, "Apology accepted," with a wink. After that night, we ended up staying in touch, and he became my first mentor, whether he liked it or not. But about 18 months into knowing Jim, we were talking on the phone one afternoon, and I shared with him the struggles I was running into trying to grow my sports training business. He replied with a line I'd heard him say in different ways before, but this time it landed very differently. He said, "Todd, if you're not willing to risk the unusual, you'll have to settle for the ordinary." Getting out of the ordinary and into the zone. I've mentioned the extraordinary world and what awaits you when you escape the forces that pull you into the ordinary world. But the extraordinary world isn't unicorns, gumdrops, and prancing fairies. The extraordinary is filled with challenges, obstacles, and dragons to slay as well. And that's both the journey and the reward. So many of us choose our path out of fear disguised as practicality. What we really want seems impossibly out of reach and ridiculous to expect, so we never dare to ask the universe for it, said actor and comedian Jim Carrey when he gave the commencement address for the Maharishi University of Management in 2014. Instead of asking the universe for it, I'm saying build an alter ego that will go on a quest to attain what you want. I learned many great lessons from my father, not the least of which is that you can fail at what you don't want, so you might as well take a chance on doing what you love, Carrey added in his speech. The extraordinary versus the ordinary is filled with more meaning, more intention, and more possibility. After 21 plus years of working with elite people on the fields of play of sports, business, and entertainment, I've learned every single one battled an enemy pulling them into an ordinary world. Every single one had an excuse, reason, or personal story they could easily lean on to shy away from the challenge of their chosen pursuit. Except they didn't. many of them stepped into an alter ego to make it happen. Even Cary Grant once said, "I pretended to be somebody I wanted to be until finally I became that person, or he became me." Those challenges, forces, obstacles, and dragons that need to be slain, however big or small, are already there whether you like it or not. And instead of just pumping up my clients or motivating them, we use an alter ego instead. Just like tennis superstar Rafael Nadal, Beyonce, David Bowie, Bo Jackson, and thousands of other people accomplishing amazing things, you can use the alter ego to shield your core self and absorb the arrows, barbs, or worries you've imagined in your mind will happen if you act in any way different to your personal narrative and story you've told yourself of who you are. NFL running back Jay Ajayi is known for being calm, cool, and quiet off the field, and he explained his alter ego, J-Train, this way. "I think some players, that's just how you try to get in your zone, where everything is instinct, and you're just out there playing the game. For me, it's the J-Train." The pursuit of finding flow state, or getting into the zone, has been the core focus of the work I've always done with athletes, entertainers, or professionals. When you reach this place, performance is heightened, it's improved. It's this intoxicating place where time seemingly stands still, where capabilities flow through you without thought, and you have this sense of just observing yourself perform. It's incredible. However, the challenge in training people to find that place was like trying to thread a rope through the eye of a needle. Why? Because fundamentally, most people, even the best of the best, get affected by the common or hidden forces or try to control the outcome rather than trusting themselves and the process. An alter ego can help build intention, promote belief, and create trust. The famous poet John Milton once wrote, "The mind is its own place, and in itself can make a heaven of hell a hell of heaven." The power to change lives inside us. Imagine you're one of my clients competing at the recent Olympic Games in South Korea in an alpine skiing event. You're waiting atop the mountain at the starting gate, clipped into your 2-meter-long skis, staring down a course that looks like a vertical cliff covered in patches of ice, waiting for the signal to burst through the gate. You'll be racing at speeds that would pass a car on the highway, and the only thing stopping you from crashing into the pine trees is an orange plastic fence. Sound dangerous? Absolutely. Should you be thinking about that danger? Imagine falling, catching an edge, slipping on the ice, or getting tangled in a pole as you race by? Hell no. If you're a skier and you're at the starting gate with seeds of doubt starting to sprout regarding the wind speed, the conditions on the hill, whether or not you can beat the time that Svetlana from Slovenia just put up, then you've been pulled back into your ordinary world. There's no trust. There's no zone or flow state. And there's no personal best performance either. This is what happened to Ian when he fell behind during tennis matches. I'd start losing and then I'd think, how am I going to come back? What's losing going to feel like? What am I going to tell my parents? What am I going to tell my friends? What am I going to tell my teammates? Guess what happens when you get in that place? You lose, Ian told me. Why does all this matter? Renowned researcher and author on human performance, Stephen Kotler, explained how using our imaginations taps into the creative part of our mind and short-circuits the negative self-talk and criticism the enemy likes to use. Studies have shown that negative self-talk, doubt, and disparagement go quiet when we're engaged in creative work. An ambitious entrepreneur, Alonto, is a great example of the creative force in action. He's had dreams of leading thousands of people as a proud Filipino-American, and the first time he had the chance to get onto a stage was in front of 700 people. Except Alonto didn't get on the stage. It was Big Wave, his Pacific Islander alter ego, who showed up, influenced by the Maui character that Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson plays in the movie Moana. "I was nervous as hell right beforehand, freaking out and sweating. The first time I stepped in front of the audience and took on the Big Wave persona, everything else fell into place. I don't even know where the words were coming from. It was almost like I was being given the words just by having the faith that I could step into that leadership role." Whatever field of play or moment of impact you're creating an alter ego for, I want you to have the same experience Alonto and the thousands of others have found using this process. You want to imagine how your alter ego will act, behave, think, speak, feel, and perform on that field of play. Then, when it's time for your phone booth moment, you'll intuitively know how to perform. And the likelihood of kicking open the metal gate to the zone, flow state, or extraordinary world will have just improved. Walking the bridges from outside to inside. The question people are most challenged with answering, what do I want? The blank look I see people give me is a common one. It's like they're scared to admit what they want. Even successful people can struggle with this question. However, a mindset accomplished people use to routinely achieve their goals is end-in-mind thinking, meaning they have a clear idea of what target they're aiming at, where they're going, or what they're creating. Lucky for you and me, there's more than one way to get there. I leaned back in my chair, waiting for Michael, a fairly successful real estate professional, to answer my question, "What do you want?" He looked pained, like he couldn't see it or admit it. So I interrupted his mental traffic jam and asked, "What don't you want?" Immediately, with a lot of frustration and emotion, he unleashed a flood of don'ts. "I don't want to worry about rejection anymore. I don't want to worry about what my boss will say if I don't hit my numbers. I don't want to wake up dreading my day anymore. I don't want to feel like I'm wasting my days away." He rattled off 12 more don'ts before he stopped to catch his breath. Just like Michael, it's so much easier for you to create a don't want list, which is exactly what you did when you unpacked all the layers on the field of play model. However, now it's time for your want list. So, if you actually went on the internal quest to reveal those things, now it's time to get clear about your extraordinary world. Now, before you fall into the trap of an internal dialogue like, "Who am I to ask for what I want? I'm not supposed to want or to have more than others. I sound so egotistical." Here's what I'd like to say to that. Sound egotistical. Admitting you want something isn't egotistical. It's honest. Now, just as we've used the Five Bridges framework in previous chapters, we'll be applying them to your extraordinary world. And the first place to start is with your ideal results on your chosen field of play. And then we work our way through the layers to your core drivers. If you recall, the five bridges consist of stop, less of, continue, more of, and start. Except in this quest, you'll only be using three of those bridges: continue, more of, and start. You're shifting your orientation on the field of play model and shifting your intentions to something positive, which leverages the self-expansive or wow mindset, which changes your motivations to the things you'd like to gain, not lose or avoid. To begin the process of getting clear about your goals, outcomes, or results, we'll start with your field of play. What would you like to continue experiencing, continue getting as a result, continue achieving? What would you like to experience more of, get more of, achieve more of? What would you like to start experiencing, start achieving, start getting? To make it easier for you, these results would all be things you could hear, see, taste, touch, or smell. For example, maybe you want to continue hearing the positive feedback on your creative work, continue seeing your revenues grow, continue seeing the reactions people have of your cooking, painting, writing, design work, etc. Continue tasting your recipes improve. Continue smelling the aromas of the place you live. Continue touching the quality tools you get to work with. Hear people talk about or share your ideas more. Score more during a game. Get more interviews. Win more awards. Receive more referrals. Have more income. Make more sales calls. Make more pars and birdies as a golfer. Attend more networking events and engage with more people. Work out more. Start a new career. Start seeing your creative work displayed publicly. Start owning more real estate. Start traveling overseas and experiencing new cultures. Start getting scholarship offers. Start hearing scouts talk about you. Start getting more press about your work. Start seeing your investments grow. Start living someplace new. I'll bet if you look at your field of play, there are already some positives you can continue developing. The bottom line when getting clear about this area is that everything is tangible. The field of play is where your results exist. Now, as you move on to the action layer, you want to think about the actions, behaviors, and skills your alter ego will use to help make those outcomes happen. The questions to ask yourself are, what do you want to start doing, start responding, start behaving, start choosing, start saying, start thinking, start attempting? What do you want to do more of, choose more of, behave more like, say more of, think more of, attempt more of? And what do you want to continue doing, continue choosing, continue thinking, continue behaving, continue saying, continue attempting? The action layer contains your actions, reactions, behaviors, skills, and knowledge. It's all the capabilities that you're bringing to your field of play. How are you showing up? How are you acting? How are you behaving? What choices are you making? If you pass all those questions over the bridges of starting, continuing, and more of, you'll get even more clear about how the new you will show up. For me, when I was starting out in business, I wanted to act more decisively because I was getting caught up in paralysis from analysis. So maybe you want to ask for the sale more, paint more, act more confidently, book more meetings, walk with my head up and more confident, make more eye contact, reach out to people more, start cooking, start writing, start playing the guitar, start preparing yourself better, start planning your week or month more effectively, start taking more shots, practice more, drink more water, say I love you more, smile more, launch more product offers, meet with team members more, attend more conferences, invest more money. When you look at this list, which isn't exhaustive, these are all the things you could do to help make the outcomes happen. These are the new actions you could take during those moments of impact. In the ordinary world, these are the actions, thoughts, or behaviors you're not taking or having, leading you to get the results you don't want. If you'd like an even more exhaustive list of actions you could take, go to altereegoeffect.com/resources for more help. Once you move through this layer, you want to apply this same framework to your belief layer to reveal the new emotions, feelings, qualities, and expectations you'll possess, which makes those actions much easier to execute. This is the new internal experience you'll have as you approach and experience this field of play. These are the forces your alter ego will use to combat the common and hidden forces with more grace, resilience, and confidence. So, what do you want to start believing, start expecting, start feeling, start valuing? What do you want to believe more of, expect more of, feel more of, value more of? What do you want to continue believing, continue expecting, continue feeling, continue valuing? Essentially, you're asking yourself what you need to believe to make those actions effortless, joyful, or more comfortable. Also, what do you need to expect about yourself or the field of play you're standing on to make those changes happen? And what do you need to value about yourself, the world, the people you interact with, your skills, and your knowledge to feel more confident, decisive, enthusiastic, peaceful, optimistic, etc.? For a more exhaustive list of positive emotions to make this easier for you, go to altereegoeffect.com/resources. Maybe you want to start valuing action over perfection. Start feeling more competent. Start believing you're capable. Feel more enthusiastic about your progress. Feel more optimistic about your ability to make a difference. Expect people to say yes to your ideas. Expect yourself to continue moving past challenges because of your determination. Gain more satisfaction from your efforts. Feel more grateful about the opportunities you're presented with. Start expecting your shots to go in. Feel like you're an unstoppable force. Feel like people want to hear from you. Expect your art to move people. Believe the stage wants you on it and feel excited about your performance. Feel like you're as important as anyone. Love failing because you know you're improving and taking action. Contrary to popular memes and quotes about successful people, that last one is key. Winners become winners because they failed more than others. So why not have a healthy relationship with that experience? It doesn't mean you accept failure as an identity. It simply means you don't let it define you and you know you're gaining more wisdom with every attempt. Ultimately, this process is going to help you find an alter ego that embodies these qualities naturally, so you can step into its power and create a new reality for yourself. What does your extraordinary world look like? Ian, who I introduced you to earlier in the book, is enjoying a thriving career as a top copywriter and founder of several companies. By most standards, he's a success. But Ian has harbored a goal he's kept buried his entire life until recently. It was only when he began tapping into and using the alter ego that he was ready and willing to admit what he wanted, to be a stand-up comedian. This is what he wants to pursue. This is his extraordinary world. He's now setting up his businesses to run without his full-time attention so that he can pursue a comedic career. He's admitting, articulating, and taking action right now to pursue a lifelong goal. He would never have taken these steps if he didn't first admit to himself what it was that he wanted more than anything. Do you want to be a powerful presenter? Great. Own it. You want to walk into an event and shake hands and greet people with pizzazz and charm? Great. Own it. Do you want to be a calm, assertive, and confident leader in the midst of crisis moments? Great. Own it. Imagine the behaviors and actions that you're taking in your extraordinary world. How are they different from your ordinary world? Are you bolder? Are you more thoughtful? Are you more focused? Do you follow through and finish all the projects you start? Are you more articulate, assertive, or active? Are you more relaxed, calmer, or peaceful? Are you more rebellious? Are you more fierce, bold, or adventurous? What are the traits that show up in your extraordinary world? What are your thoughts and feelings? What would you be thinking of your abilities to create an extraordinary world? How would you be feeling about yourself, the world around you, the people you interact with? What are your predominant emotions? Remember Bo Jackson? His dominant emotion on the football field was a deep certainty that he would destroy anything in his path, and it didn't matter who it would be. He didn't care. Although you can't control the outcomes and the results in your extraordinary world, I still want you to imagine what those could look like. Paint a picture in your mind's eye. How does it feel to live in your extraordinary world? Do you want to be known as a strong leader in your company? Do you want to be someone who speaks up in team meetings and shares her ideas confidently? Do you want to be someone your team turns to for advice and confidence, who leads calmly and assertively through a crisis? Do you want to have a trophy handed to you on stage for Salesperson of the Year? Do you want to overhear your kids saying to each other how their mom is the best mom? Still getting stuck? If admitting what you want or what your extraordinary world looks like remains a stretch, then try this. Ask yourself, what would my alter ego admit it wants or expects to hear, see, feel, touch, or smell? While you may not have built out your alter ego yet, you may have an inkling of what this secret identity may want. Suspend your disbelief for a moment and imagine that your alter ego has zero hang-ups when it comes to articulating what it wants. He, she, it easily and effortlessly admits what it wants. What does your alter ego believe it can do or create? Chapter 10, The Power of a Mission. There are a series of small parks along the Hudson River in Manhattan running up the entire length of the island. for an island filled with concrete, pavement, and skyscrapers. It's a needed escape from the hum and noise of city life. Anytime an athlete is coming through town to play against any one of the 10 pro sports teams in the area, or a business leader I work with is coming to New York for meetings, it's a convenient chance to connect face-to-face. I'll almost always take them for a walk along the Hudson. We walk because, in my experience, humans are more prone to open up when they're moving. Plus, the fresh air and exercise never hurt. On this one occasion, a client connected me with a teammate in his second year in the National Hockey League. After years of always being a go-to guy, Matt was struggling. He'd gone from always being a star to sinking to the bottom of the mediocre middle on his NHL team. We'd walked about 20 blocks along the water, talking about his future, and decided to take a break on a bench at the 26th Street Pier. As we sat down, I leaned forward and asked him, "You know how Batman is fighting for justice? I'm curious, what are you fighting for?" "What do you mean?" he replied. "Well, for the past 20 minutes, it's been like pulling the teeth from a lion, trying to get you to tell me what you truly want from your career. And you just got done telling me you feel like you're letting your dreams slip away because you're getting so caught up in your head. So personally, that would piss me off. The idea that everything I've busted my ass to do to get here is getting tangled up in a web of bullshit. Those thoughts in my head would piss me off. So why are you going to start showing up differently? What are you fighting for?" Batman fought for justice after witnessing his parents die at the hands of criminals. We all have something we can fight for. Justice, honor, fairness, our family, our community, our religion, our name, even our creative talents. So what about you? He sat on the bench leaning forward with his elbows resting on his huge hockey thighs, staring at the passing ferries, and after a long pause said, "Self-respect." "Why self?" But before I could finish my question, he continued, "To show that someone from my podunk town in Ohio made it, and bring the Stanley Cup back to our crappy little community hockey rink." "Meh. Sounds cliche. I've heard it before," I shot back at him. "Fuck you," he quickly responded and was super annoyed. "Why would you say that? I thought you were supposed to help, not put me down." "Matt, that feeling welling up right now, what is it?" "Pissed offness?" "Good. Don't forget it. Because here's what I know. You carry that with you every freaking time you don't play your guts out on the ice. And you direct that pissed offness at yourself when you don't show up. My job isn't to be your best friend. My job is to help you perform. And sometimes that means challenging you. You've just admitted what you want. Good. Now do you feel a strong emotional pull toward what you want? Do you feel so motivated to go on this quest that nothing will stop you? Nothing will get in your way? Does it have meaning? If your answer is no, we have a problem." Holocaust survivor and celebrated psychiatrist Viktor Frankl once wrote, "Life is never made unbearable by circumstances, but only by lack of meaning and purpose." When you look at the superheroes in comic books, the great characters in movies and literature, they all seem to be fighting for something bigger than themselves. And even the ones that start out doing good deeds for selfish reasons end up finding deeper meaning in their labors. It gives the effort, struggle, and challenge a higher purpose. More and more research is piling up that shows the obsession with happiness is causing people to feel empty. In a study published in the Journal of Positive Psychology in 2013, Roy Baumeister and his colleagues found that people who pursued activities only for personal pleasure lacked a sense of meaning in their lives. Another study, conducted by Stephen Cole of the UCLA School of Medicine and Barbara Fredrickson of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, revealed that people who found deeper meaning in their lives had stronger immune systems than those who had a more self-centered approach to life. This suggests that if you want to chase your goals, finding deeper meaning in your efforts will make you stronger, literally. You need to feel pulled as if you're on a conveyor belt that goes only one way. There's nothing you can do to stop yourself from being drawn into your extraordinary world. If you lack the strong emotional resonance, or you're indifferent toward your extraordinary world, Then, why are you about to go on this journey? Why build an alter ego for a world that you kind of, sort of, maybe want to experience? The emotions are mechanisms that set the brain's highest level goals. Once triggered by an event, an emotion triggers the cascade of sub-goals and sub-sub-goals that we call thinking and acting, explained Steven Pinker, Harvard professor and one of the world's leading cognitive scientists. In other words, our emotions drive our actions. It's almost impossible for you to take action towards something you're indifferent to. Beyond just taking action, the emotional resonance you feel toward what you want, toward why you're creating this alter ego, is also your motivation. The word motivation comes from the Latin word motivus, which means moving cause. As a mental strength coach, there's one thing I can't coach people on. That's motivation. I won't touch it. It's one of the few things that no one can coach you on or create for you. It's the X factor. I can't make an athlete get up at 4 a.m. to run drills or wind sprints. I can't make an entrepreneur want to start and grow a business or to stick with it when they hit the rough patches. I can't make someone want their goal bad enough that they're driven to overcome any and every obstacle, no matter how tough or how high the cost. In his best-selling book, How We Decide, Jonah Lehrer makes the case that rationality depends on emotion. Feeling, not intellect, drives motivation. Lehrer points out, emotion and motivation share the same Latin root, movere, which means to move. The world is full of things, and it is our feelings that help us choose among them. You have to find that motivation within, and very often that motivation comes from feeling so emotionally connected to what we want that nothing else matters. It's the core purpose of our being. We have to go on this quest. We have to enter our extraordinary world, no matter the cost, no matter the odds, no matter the outcome. Wanted, strong emotion. When you break down the motivations of all the great heroes and heroines in comic books, movies, or literature, you find there are mostly four core motivators, and there can often be a blending of two or more. Trauma, destiny, altruism, self-expression. Trauma is something that lies at the heart of what started Batman's mission. He dedicated himself to fighting crime after seeing his parents murdered. Whether it's righting a wrong, sticking it to the man, or showing someone that slighted you, you can't be stopped, trauma is one of the most common motivators. In many ways, this is what drove Oprah Winfrey. Even her famous quote, "You can't discriminate against the best," reveals her resiliency in the face of discrimination and trauma. Destiny is what drives Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She discovers she's the chosen one, blessed with supernatural powers to fight demons. She's reluctant at first, but finally accepts the challenge. Many ambitious people I've worked with or spoken to over the years explain this similar feeling of being chosen. They've explained their aspirations felt more like they'd been chosen to pursue them, and there wasn't a choice in the matter. They were the ones that had to find a way to make it happen. Many of us identify with the feeling of assuming great responsibility. Altruism is one of the core drivers of Wonder Woman. In the 2017 movie, she selflessly tries to save humanity from evil. Altruism can come in the form of activism and wanting to help or serve others because they are forgotten or because of a great love for them. In many ways, this was a core driver of Matt, the young hockey player I mentioned at the beginning of the chapter. He found deep meaning in bringing hope to an area decimated by the shifting American landscape. Countless young athletes who come from single-parent homes find this to be a core motivator and take care of a single parent who sacrificed so much for them to make it. Self-expression is a core driver of people motivated by merely wanting to answer the question, "I wonder what I can do, create, find." Some people are just deeply motivated to uncover what they're made of and love the creative, athletic, or scientific process. Leonardo da Vinci, Charles Darwin, the great Wayne Gretzky, and many others can be found here. Gretzky, though, also had great reverence for the game of hockey and his family, which would evoke altruism as well. When you look at any of these four motivating factors, they all stem from events situations, or experiences that started these people down their paths. However, eventually they found a deeper meaning to their work. Batman continued on his mission because he liked helping people and fighting for the little guy. Oprah continued to find more joy in relating to people with a realness and honesty the public hadn't experienced before, which changed people's lives. Buffy continued her fight because she was there to save the people she loved. And Wonder Woman continued to pursue the ideals of fairness and equality while saving humans from evil. In all of these situations, their real purpose was eventually transformed by the core drivers outlined in the field of play model in Chapter 3. Family, community, nation, religion, race, gender, identifiable group, idea, cause. When you begin to attach what you're trying to achieve to something larger than yourself, it delivers a deeper purpose to your mission. And when it comes to feelings, there's no right or wrong answer to what exactly you're feeling. It just needs to be strong. You may not be able to articulate the feeling. Words are a clumsy way to describe a sensation. If you feel strongly about what you want, but you can't tell me what you feel, then you're in the clear. Later, you may find the words to articulate it, or not. Words don't matter here, just the feeling. Despite what some people in the self-help movement may preach, negative emotions like rage and anger can be incredibly motivating, especially in the beginning when you're taking a new action and trying to build momentum. Those powerful emotions move us, and that's what you need early on. Most people are stuck sitting on the sidelines while the game of life is happening on the field. Whatever gets you onto the field and gets you moving is all that matters. Ask yourself, why do I want this? Or why do I want to make it my extraordinary world? Or why do I want to create an alter ego? Purpose and emotion are intimately entwined. For example, my family was and still is one of the leading drivers for why I choose to create and grow companies and to work with athletes, business leaders, and entrepreneurs. Since I was a boy, I felt a deep sense of responsibility and resonance with my family name. The good people in my family fuel me. That's part of my motivation. It's one of the reasons why I want to realize my extraordinary world. And notice I said my extraordinary world. Not yours, not my dad's, mine. That doesn't mean I'm selfish, because a huge part of my world is serving others. However, I'm the one deciding what that world will look like, feel like, and sound like, not somebody else. Many people I've met or worked with are driven because they want to escape something or someone in their past. They were filled with anger or rage about an experience or the way someone mistreated them. I met a Mexican-American businessman at a conference years ago. We hit it off so well, we decided to sneak away at lunch. I learned he had accumulated a substantial amount of wealth in his career. He was kind and soft-spoken, rather unassuming, but when he started to talk about his history, fire sparked in his eyes. He told me about one of the first times he showed up at a prospective client's home. As he walked up the driveway, someone was leaving, and as the two passed, this person said to him, "Oh, you must be the new gardener here to trim the hedges." That one comment was a turning point moment for him, he told me. The only reason the person thought he was there to trim the hedges was his skin color. He said, "I made a promise to myself that day to be so rich I was going to turn the tables and hire some white guy to be my gardener." He found his emotional resonance, which helped to push him toward and into his extraordinary world. That became his initial motivating force. But after a while, he began to see the impact he was making in his community and the inspiration he'd become to other Mexican Americans. And it became a core driver to keep growing and taking risks. This is the type of strong emotional resonance that I'm asking you to find and acknowledge. It's the purpose of why you picked up this book in the first place and why you're building your alter ego. Another example is John. John has an impressive family lineage. His grandmother, originally from Europe, came from a royal family forced to flee during World War II. She landed in Mexico and married a general. John comes from a family known for its power and standing. He's a first-generation American, and trying to make a name for himself in business. John has a great reverence for his family, heritage, and lineage, and he wants to plant the proverbial family flag proudly in a new country and continue the family legacy. This mixture of his core drivers of family, cause, and idea is what's fueling him to push past any barriers he's had in the past. Sometimes the emotional resonance is driven by our family, our communities, or our nation. I had a client who competed in the Olympic Games in London in 2012, who was inspired to be the first person to have her country's flag unfurl as she watched it slowly rise to the ceiling from her place on a podium. Whether her country's national anthem played because she won first place didn't matter. Seeing her country's flag was all she cared about. National pride was a core driver that gave her the emotional connection to the extraordinary world she envisioned. She never saw it happen. But coming into the event, she was ranked 28th in the world in her sport. She wasn't even the top-ranked athlete in her country, but she finished fourth at the Olympics and shattered all her previous personal bests. Sometimes, the emotional resonance behind what we want is very individual. We want to be rich. We want to be secure. We want more power. If your why is more individualistic, that's okay. It doesn't have to be a grand plan to save humanity, and it doesn't have to be driven by a peaceful, loving, gentle state of being either. But as the studies I mentioned earlier demonstrate, it has to be deeply meaningful to you. And in most cases, these initial motivators end up finding roots in any of the core drivers. You're exploring the boundaries of what you can do. The initial motivation of wanting more money ends up becoming attached to impact on family, community, or nation. Or it can become attached to an idea that leaves you wondering just how much you can create. Some of the most successful athletes, business executives, and entrepreneurs whom I've worked with were driven toward their extraordinary world for selfish reasons. And I don't mean selfish in a negative way either. If this is the emotional resonance that gets you moving, then have at it. Tell me you want to see your name in lights outside of a real estate office. Tell me you want to see your name as the executive chef at a Michelin-starred restaurant. Tell me you want to sell a company for millions of dollars and then take the paperwork and slam it down on your father's kitchen table telling him, "And you told me I'd never make something of myself. Now look at me, pops." A lot of clients, especially entrepreneurs, tell me they want to be of service to or make a difference in the world. If that's the driving emotion within you, if that's why you're building and creating an alter ego, then who am I to tell you to find something else? I don't care what emotion or what purpose sits inside you. It's none of my business. What I do care about is that you're honest with yourself about feeling a strong emotional resonance with what you want and why you want it. That emotion is what's going to get you moving and keep you moving. When I started out, my wants were very individualistic. Over time, I found a good chunk of my emotional resonance and purpose comes from wanting to make the largest impact on the most people I possibly can. That's my fuel. That's why I do what I do today. The five whys. If you have your emotional resonance and it's strong, or you know why you're creating your alter ego, then you can skip this section. Move on to the next chapter. But if you're struggling to get the emotional core and to connect to why you want what you want, then try using the five whys technique. The five whys is a problem-solving tool invented by Sekichi Toyoda, the founder of Toyota Motor Company in the 1930s, and more formally developed by Taichi Ono, a pioneer of the Toyota production system in the 1950s. The five whys helps someone to find and understand the cause of a problem. It's a relatively simple process and great to help you figure out what's really motivating you. Here's what you do. Ask why. And keep asking until you get to the core, to that place of deep emotional resonance. For example, I get up at 4:30 a.m. to meet my trainer from 5 to 6:30 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Why? Because I want to be in better shape. Why do I want to be in better shape? Because when I play with my kids, I want to have more energy than they do. A few months ago, I was playing with them when my back got sore and my breathing labored. 10 minutes in, and I was exhausted. I had to take a break. I told the kids I needed to stop. I was too tired. Their looks of disappointment gutted me. I didn't want to be that dad who couldn't keep up, who missed out on moments and opportunities to play with them because he wasn't in the best shape. Okay, I didn't need 5 whys to get to what motivated me. It only took 2. And having the goal of keeping up with young children may have been lofty, but I was up for the challenge of wearing them out. So my core driver for altering my fitness was found in my family. Use as many why questions as you need. And if you continue with this process, you'll almost always end up finding it leads to one of the core drivers. Family, community, nation, religion, race, gender, identifiable group, idea, or cause. This is like drilling for oil. You keep asking until you discover a gusher of emotion. You'll know it when you hit it, because the emotion will be strong. Knowing this is what will keep that fire burning when you're tired and sore and you want to quit or give up. Every high-performing, successful person faces those moments when they doubt whether they should or even want to keep going. They all question whether the sacrifices and choices they're making matter. The ones who keep going are the ones who know why they're in this race in the first place. They know their purpose for going after their extraordinary world and building an alter ego that will help them get there. So the simple question becomes, why do you want to activate this heroic self onto your field of play? Is it because of a deep connection to family, community, nation, religion, race, gender, identifiable group, idea, or cause? Or your original motivation could be stemming from something like a hurt, being wronged, creative expression, or a selfish need. But you'll find that as you move forward, you're going to discover a new core driver that will sustain you over the long term. A psychological trick. Many people have a difficult time reflecting on their own lives. Scientists refer to it as self-reflection paradox. The idea of asking yourself challenging or difficult questions like what you want or why you want something can tie you up in a psychological knot. However, there is a helpful technique called self-distancing. 2 psychologists from the University of Minnesota and University of California, Berkeley, Ethan Kross and Özlem Eduk, have done thousands of hours of research on the technique and its benefits. It is also possible for people to take a step back when thinking about past experiences and reason about them from the perspective of a distanced observer, akin to a fly on the wall, they write. So to use this psychological trick to your own benefit, one of the most effective ways is to ask yourself, why does Jane want to write best-selling novels? Or what's the purpose of Todd's life? This third-person language creates an observer-type effect and can allow you to gain perspective on a challenging or difficult question. This self-distancing technique provides even more evidence to the power of the alter ego effect. The alter ego ends up giving you an observer-type advantage that allows you to free yourself from self-talk loops or emotional spirals. It gives you the opportunity to ask yourself, what would Wonder Woman do? Or how would Mother Teresa respond in this situation? Or why is Batman going to finish this hard project? So when you think about what your core drivers are, or you think about the core drivers of your alter ego, using this self-distancing technique can help you find your answers. Time makes why clear. The more you bring the most powerful version of yourself onto your field of play, the more you're going to discover your why. Many athletes, writers, entrepreneurs, and other creatives have told me they didn't start their journeys by knowing the answer to why. They were just interested in something, or they had some skills, and they were committed to developing. It was more about self-expression, and as their performance improved and their results changed, their passion for it grew. As their passion grew, so did the clarity around why. Sometimes the answer grows from the doing, not from the thinking or feeling. Chapter 11. Defining your superpowers and crafting the name. One of the most challenging sports I've ever worked is equestrian, and Lisa was a tough nut to crack. when you think about all the challenging components I'm trying to bring together so that an elite athlete can perform at their best, it's daunting. Aligning the mental, emotional, and physical worlds can feel like herding three cats at once. But in the equestrian world, a factor gets added that only magnifies those three worlds. A horse. Equestrian is a fascinating collection of different disciplines. There's horse jumping, horse racing, polo,